So as we build systems that utilizes blockchain for larger investment banks, public transportation, asset tokenization capabilities, we built this capability and it was essentially a private enterprise blockchain. And that's where Lightning came from, right? And those systems are great. They perform at tremendous speed, but it lacked the interoperability, the transparency, which we love on open permissionless networks, right? So anybody can build on top of Ethereum and call an existing smart contract and interact with each other. So that was something that was missing substantially in the enterprise world. And I think it's missing a lot of innovation. And we couldn't build on top of open marketplaces, other DeFi ecosystems. And that was a huge minus. And that sort of led to the creation of Lightlink as a technology iteration from our Web3 studio. And we turned it into a separate network, a separate business called Lightlink.
Welcome to Web3 on Fire, where we take you on an inspiring journey through the ever-evolving world of Web3. In each episode, our host, Rob, delves into the heart of the latest innovations in decentralized technology, including account abstraction, smart accounts, aka smart contract wallets, and the future of work in the Web3 ecosystem. Hey, what's going on, everyone? Today on the pod, we have Roy Hoy from Lightlink. It's an L2 built for scalability, speed, and security, built on top of Ethereum with a bunch of interesting features like enterprise mode that turns the tokenomics of gas on its head and a bunch of other innovative features that we'll certainly get into. But first off, welcome, Roy. Welcome to the pod. Welcome to Web3 on Fire.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Would love just to hear a little bit about your build background in tech. What era did you come into tech, and what were some of the first projects that brought you into your first building? And then how did you get into crypto in particular?
Sure thing. Yeah. I've been in tech for quite a long time. It's been over 22 years, actually. So all the way from computer science degree in the university, and then working for a large telco. And I think my entrepreneurial side really shined when I was really bored at my corporate job, right? I was making the video game forums and building technology on the side. And that became one of the largest social networking community in the context of video games here in Australia. And where hundreds and thousands of users interacted with each other and created lots of user-generated content. And that was really interesting to be a part of. During that journey, we worked with many large media companies around the world, try to syndicate content, form partnerships. And that eventually was pivoted into an e-commerce company. And we helped brands around the world integrate with large e-commerce companies. So I think there was a lot of consistencies in enterprise applications and talking to large brands in my journey. And when we exited that in 2017, that was the first ICO boom, right? And friends of ours asked if we could help them with building crypto capabilities. And as entrepreneurial, as technology, you know, it's a great intersection of both. And it was one of those moments that I saw which was similar to the earlier internet days, the early dot-com boom times. And that was super interesting to participate. We built digital currencies, wallets, exchanges, and payment services. So that business is called Pelor, and it's a Web3 builder. And we've been in the Web3 industry essentially for the past 6 years.
Nice. That's really cool. Just bringing back to the social network side and gaming communities, that's really cool because obviously within Web3, there's so many parallels to the gaming communities now with using Discord to build Web3 communities and Telegram. And those are such rich, vibrant, and engaged communities because there's such a commonality between the people, the story, the community, the culture. So it seems like that also has some parallels to Web3 now. And also, it sounds like enterprise has been a huge focus, and being able to consult, help build within that space led you to then this next evolution in terms of solving a problem. So what happened after, or current, is this a Web3 builder that's currently going still as well?
So as we built systems that utilizes blockchain for larger investment banks, public transportation, asset tokenization capabilities, we built this capability and it was essentially a private enterprise blockchain. And that's where Lightning came from, right? And those systems are great. They perform at tremendous speed, but it lacked the interoperability, the transparency, which we love on open permissionless networks, right? So anybody can build on top of Ethereum and call a existing smart contract and interact with each other. So that was something that was missing substantially in the enterprise world. And I think it's missing a lot of innovation. And we couldn't build on top of open marketplaces, other DeFi ecosystems. And that was a huge minus. And that sort of led to the creation of Lightlink as a technology iteration from our Web3 studio. And we turned it into a separate network, a separate business called Lightlink.
So there was a bit of a vacuum that was formed in terms, so you had private blockchain enterprise that would be rolled out just for them that they would be able to use, but it lacked that ability to actually connect with, have the building upon the shoulders of giants or stand on the shoulders of giants and being able to use other DEXs or other dApps that were built on top that then you could extend the functionality to the user. So this was a go-between and now sounds like it's essentially an enterprise-ready private blockchain built on top with a compatibility with EVM compatibility.
Yeah, so we saw these challenges, right? And in early 21, we also participated in many different NFT projects. And I completely understand where you're coming from in terms of creating Discord communities, right? Because there's a lot of similarities there. And to date, we've done over 40 different NFT drops. So I completely understand the issues on layer ones in terms of the throughput, the cost, the potential latency in getting a transaction through the door. So a lot of limitations with layer one. And when you have enterprise on one side and layer one on the other, layer two is a natural step in the middle. And in terms of Lightlink, it's an open, permissionless public network. It's not closed. It's EVM, it's Solidity. You can deploy smart contracts on top. It's fairly easy to integrate with. We currently have three different NFT marketplaces and actually talking to the fourth one because it's so easy to integrate, right? If you have an existing EVM-based NFT marketplaces, you can just point to a different RPC endpoint and it will just integrate. Now, we have this unique capability, and that's the enterprise mode where we can toggle a smart contract into a gasless capability. So users can interact with that contract gaslessly. And it's an innovation on top of a public chain.
Nice. Yeah, we'll absolutely get into that because with 4337 and Ambar smart accounts and gas abstraction, would love to talk about the implementation and the way in which you use the tokenomics model versus maybe this gas abstraction, but it sounds like it's similar. We'll definitely get into that. But before we do, I'd love to roll back to maybe early days of Lightlink and what were the first early challenges that you were able to solve as you rolled out a public L2 that was enterprise and scalable with low cost as well as the high throughput. But what were those first challenges that you were able to create value around and connect customer to?
Yeah, I think there are plenty of technical challenges as any businesses, right? But if we are building on chain, this is something unique we've found when you're building on this ecosystem, you just simply can't make mistakes. It's hilarious because we've been in enterprise tech development for 20 years or so. And when you build something on chain, sometimes you also build an app or have a AWS cluster doing something else. And in those type of developments, even when I was working at a telecommunications company, it is fairly common to see production errors. No one's perfect, right? You do the best job you can, you deploy something online, and if it has, we've tested extensively, but sometimes things go the other way, and it's okay. You manage the issue, you have outage, you fix, resolve the issue, and increment, you iterate, you improve, right? But something that's so unique about the Web3 world is when you deploy a smart contract, it needs to work, it needs to be perfect, right? And we've seen catastrophes in NFT mints where millions and millions of dollars are locked into smart contracts or the inability to there is a vulnerability in another smart contract somewhere else. That challenge you were talking about is strive for perfection. And it's really hard to do. It takes a tremendous amount of time, effort to ensure something's perfect. And no one's perfect. But balancing getting something out the door, observing how it works with the real world, and ensure high quality in an environment that has essentially zero tolerance for error is a difficult thing to do.
So obviously early days before one is established, it's very difficult. You have tons of challenges, and versus Web 2.0 and the super fast failure, ship quickly, get the errors out to the users, maybe get feedback. It's very different in smart contract world. So once you had the foundations laid there for smart contracts and really the protocol and all of your white papers written, audited, and then some of those things deployed, what were some of those really exciting early wins for Lightlink in particular, where you really saw the value come through for a client or for a project?
Yeah, so we made technical assumptions, right? Because before you build something, you pick a direction. Do you go for Rust or do you go for Golang? Do you choose to adopt Solidity or do you choose to adopt something else? And different chains exist making different technical decisions. And in a way, when we made those decisions, we had the benefits of hindsight in the mistakes that we've made or the alternate directions we should have chosen when we were building our enterprise blockchain capability. So when we were working on Lightlink, to decide to adopt an EVM-based ecosystem technology to build on top of Ethereum, to use Solidity, and to use Ether as a native gas token. And those are decisions and almost trade-offs and gambles we made. And in hindsight, when we saw other people using the system and ability to add Lightlink to MetaMask, you know, with a click of a button, that makes for us offer token gaslessly. And it's almost, you know, mind-blowing to see other people saying, wow, this is actually really easy. It's so good to be able to integrate. It was so frictionless to add Lightlink to our network of chains. And that harmony of different Ethereum ecosystems, right? Having all of these chains all working together and they all interconnect. That's just really, really beautiful. And we're very fortunate we've made those technical decisions early on.
Yeah, it always goes smoothly when you've done a ton of work behind the scenes making those decisions. And then exactly. Like magic, it all just works. But as you said, it's very different. But it also seems like you had the benefit of being able to roll out some of the enterprise private blockchain side of things where maybe you could redeploy a smart contract, whereas in the public blockchain, that smart contract lives forever. You could redirect and point to a new one, but obviously then you're losing credibility in things that come with the deployment of that first one or the faulty one. So let's get into some of the details around Lightlink. You had mentioned the gasless transactions. Now, is this part of 4337? Gas abstraction, or was this a new kind of idea that you had come up with in order to create this different tokenomics model?
Yeah, it's fairly different. I think gasless today, largely in public networks, is a relay. So instead of you paying gas as the user who's sending this token or whatever on-chain transaction that you're doing, you're passing this activity to instruct someone else to perform on your behalf. And therefore, the relayer is paying the same transaction cost for you. So a lot of the work has been done around that. And that's great because in many situations, it works very frictionlessly for the user. But at the same time, so this type of technology model is something that we have adopted for projects that we have done in the past as well. So a game called Red Village, we built a lot of technology around that. And to make it into a frictionless user experience when gamers are playing this game, it's a Web3 game, a great Web3 game, you should check it out. But when they are trying to enter the game, all they need to do is submit a signature and that gets relayed to us and we then submit the transaction on behalf of the user. You're essentially passing along the economics. But at the same time, the entire economy, if you look at a blockchain as an economy, obeys the same rules. Everyone is a supply and demand, right? the economics is always about how much demand is there, and if there isn't enough supply, the price would increase to deter demand. And that works great. But in many situations, especially on layer ones, because the supply isn't there as much as in the layer twos, you cause gas spikes because there's so much demand and there isn't enough supply. And therefore, the spike, the price of the transaction skyrockets. And then in a span of minutes or seconds, the transaction fee could 10x or increase substantially and becomes almost unusable. And a lot of things break as a result. And it's a great economics model to deploy for a open layer one because it has a particular purpose in this world. But in the layer two environment, when you have substantially more supply, and if you use the same economic model, sometimes it doesn't make sense because the supply is so tremendously more, right? But what we have adopted, just trying to explain the technology a little bit more, is a secondary economic model. So as opposed to supply and demand, it's a bit more bulk buying. So you might have a live auction market on one part of this economy. On the other part of the economy, there's a Costco. If you want to buy things in bulk, say 50,000 transactions a day, and because this technology we have built and largely exists in the layer two world, have substantial supply, right? So you carve out parts of the supply and go, let's try to provide this supply to companies or needs that has that requires certain blocks, certain bulks, certain be able to buy this capability in bulk. From that perspective, it's an additional economics model. So not a pure relay, but the ability to buy things in bulk. And that's the core of our enterprise mode tokenomics.
Interesting. And so with that, is it similar to, so you're flipping it on to, let's say, the developer or the game itself, and they're buying up the chunk of, let's say, transactions, 10,000 total, and they're going to use those within the span of a day worth of a bunch of different players playing on behalf of that. That's interesting. Could you imagine you could also use that with a relayer in terms of maybe similar to something like a gas hawk, which looks for ideal times in terms of transaction, essentially on the L1, looking for a time when gas is cheaper or there are less critical blocks going through at certain times of the day. Are there other ideas around that, or is this kind of locked into the protocol for you all?
Yeah, so the enterprise mode is locked into the protocol, but for a gas relay, you can implement that in anywhere, right? You can do that in the public and permissionless part of Lightlink, or you can do it on the enterprise side if it makes sense to you to extract layers of complexity from the user. You know, there are other needs of a relayer. In terms of where and when to store transactions, I think it's less important on the layer two because there is substantially more supply. Now, from a layer two to layer one rollup or truth anchoring, it's about security. Therefore, we do it on a time basis rather than when the gas is cheaper. So for every 3 hours, we will write to layer one, as opposed to we will try to figure out when is the best, cheapest time to write to layer one in over a 24-hour period.
And I could see also the developers and those that are making decisions on the building side, choosing, for instance, various other networks or L2s or tokens to be using in order to keep track of less critical functions within, let's say, their game or within, they have a DAO that operates and governs the DAO. You might have tokens spread across in various chains, et cetera. So there's a bit of interoperability there with Lightlink in terms of WIT tokens. So ETH is a native token that can be bridged and used within. And then is there support for others?
Yeah, of course. So it's a public permissionless network. It's EVM, Solidity, and therefore, if they have a bridge infrastructure, you can deploy the bridge to connect to Lightlink fairly easily. We have a native bridge, which we have created to provide almost a official way for people to interact, to provide trust, right? So that bridge currently supports many popular crypto assets. And if you operate a particular token, just let us know. As long as it's it has a decent reputation and trust, we're more than happy to add that token to the bridge. Now, Rob, you said something really interesting. It's the multi-chain architecture. So I've been doing a lot of thinking around that idea, right? Because many developers today have this single chain mentality. When they go, hey, I created my native token on BNB, and therefore I must do everything on BNB. And it's a mindset, I think, important in the layer one world. And now because we have layer two and to a degree layer three concepts, you can free your mindset from that limitation. Because if you're doing a pure BNB execution and switch to Ethereum, yeah, it's a lot of headache. But what we're trying to introduce and to share this new idea, it's keeping value. So things like USDT, like valuable PFPs, your identity on chains with the most decentralization, the most security, because it's the most interoperable, it's the most vibrant economies, right? So it makes sense for you to use layer ones for important transactions, significant transactions. Now for layer twos, if you're building a game and you're leveling up and having points or gathering achievements, those transactions might not have the same value. It's very valuable to yourself, but it might not be valuable to other people, right? You should use something that is very cost effective. And that's where layer two comes in. So you can adopt a value in layer one, records in layer two type of architecture. And that's something we're trying to share with the rest of the world. It's something important to consider. Now, the reason why it should be in the layer two as opposed to a database, because a lot of developers go, it's actually very expensive to chuck everything on layer one, and therefore we put all of our leveling data, game score, and in-game currency on in the database. The reason why we have on the blockchain is because it becomes interoperable, it becomes transparent. So if you have another game or a game that is a part of your ecosystem and you log in with the same credentials, you can look at on-chain data and go, hey, this player has played this game for the past 2 months, and therefore let's unlock a different experience for this player. And that becomes a much better user experience.
Yeah, we are all for any improvement to Web3 experiences. And I really do believe that games are a huge way in. It's very different than if you have everyone in the world transacting financials each day, similar to a traditional credit card or debit card, and you need this insane throughput with crazy security versus a smaller group of people with interests that are culturally wrapped around some community and an interest base. But then there's a depth to those transactions. Like you're saying, essentially, you have some financial transactions, then there are these, I don't want to use the term microtransactions because it's the complete wrong term, but smaller transactions that are less financial, but still need to be tracked, and having those on chain, the interoperability, the portability, and the transparency in terms of reselling those characters, character traits, all the open marketplace things that can unlock. What are some of the other facets to Lightlink in terms of the focus? So we have gaming in terms that that helps to increase throughput, increase the security and the usability of these products. How do the other facets of what's possible with Lightlink's technology?
Yeah, sure. Great question. We are infrastructure, right? So I think it's what is AWS great for? And yeah, to it adds value, right? It adds value to gaming industry. There are partners of ours that are building a metaverse. So from that perspective, currency in that world is crypto, and assets in that world are NFTs. And it makes a lot of sense for that economy to be sitting on top of a blockchain because it's open, it's permissionless, and all the attributes of Web3, right? In that future metaverse world, we could add a lot of value. Ticketing is another sector which we are working with a few businesses on in making secondary trading a better part of economics, having scarcity, having security and all the elements that ticketing we can improve on in the context of ticketing. So those are interesting Web3 use cases, but in the Web2 world, payments is really interesting. You know, payments is super simple, right? From a Web3 tech perspective, it's a ERC20 token with a transfer. But when you look at real world applications of payments, it's tremendous. It's like what you said, retail. You walk into a shop, you buy a coffee, and you want that transaction to be near real time, to be super secure, to be finite. So the use systems that you can build on top of simple Web3 payments is really interesting. And the same payment technology can be used in public transportation, can be used in gift cards and lots of different use cases in the real world. But from a Web3 perspective, it's just the ERC20 token, right? It's the foundation of DeFi. Now, there are other conversations that we are actively engaged in, such as a supply chain. But that's, I think, in my opinion, very enterprise focused and less tied into the Web3 world. It's still very interesting regardless.
It seems like there's a lot more, even though it's enterprise and it is scalable to a large degree, it's more consumer focused in terms of the end product, even though it is infrastructure. It's infrastructure to enable these experiences that people will end up having, not just pushing bits and bytes around the internet to turn on switches or turn on relays or open pumps or valves or make the bus go. So that's pretty cool that you have this idea of integrating much more of this, because like you mentioned, Web3 has a bunch of interesting use cases around what you can do in DeFi overall. So you're imagining bringing those to the everyday world, where instead of, as you said, it's a very complex monetary and financial system of just transacting each day with a debit card requires a ton of technology, you know, and billions of dollars worth of infrastructure to make happen, versus we implement Web3 technologies and suddenly those costs and things can come down and we can enable much more because of the native functionality that's inherent within Web3.
Yeah, exactly. When you look at, and this is, again, speaking to my experiences in the enterprise world, right? When we work with larger corporates, especially in the financial industry, you have to spend substantial amount of capital, not only on the infrastructure, but things around the infrastructure. For example, the location of your data center, physical access, whether if it's cameras or alarms or the locks on the door to secure your premise. Bad actors can't literally get in and mess around with your data center. So this, the physical infrastructure built around data security is substantial, right? Where you look at Web3 as a, I think I'm speaking on top in reference to the traditional crypto blockchain. So Bitcoin as the number one first blockchain, and now I'm talking about Ethereum as a blockchain, as a infrastructure technology, right? Because there are many aspects of Web3 and many aspects of digital ledger technology that doesn't operate in the context of security. But when I'm talking about a blockchain like Ethereum, it has inherent security measures, and that's super, super, you know, it uses asymmetric security, it uses elliptic curve type of cryptography to ensure it's only you that can write this data. It's only you who holds this private key can write this data. And that built-in security doesn't exist in default enterprise data storage systems like Oracle or SQL or SAP, right? And you have to spend substantial amount of security around that. Yeah, I completely agree in terms of in the real world environment, you need to spend substantially more funds where those capabilities are inherently there by default in the Web3 world.
You brought up two interesting points. One, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Do you see a space for some of the crypto technology, blockchain technology, helping the IoT and actual physical security space when it comes to file storage, physical premise, using some of the Web3 technology to then also secure the security methods by which those data centers are secured? Because also when you're doing enterprise and you're using on-prem, and there are many more requirements, as you were mentioning, but what are your thoughts about the future of IoT and Web3?
Yeah, great question. It's, I think In short answer, yeah, I think blockchains can add substantial value, right? Now it's all about, I think in the real world, it's all about economics and practicality and am I going to get fired for using this particular technology? So it's a little bit different. I think decision-making doesn't necessarily, it isn't dependent on the best technology out there. But from a characteristics of blockchain, it's a technology that, and in my mind, it's the only technology that's out there in the public domain with enough maturity that has proven itself for such a long time to have the capability to prove truth, right? That ability, the immutability aspect of a blockchain technology to say this data can't be changed because you have a chain of blocks. And if data was changed, that chain will fall. And hopefully there is enough eyes in this world to look at and ensure the integrity of the chain stand, which is the other part of blockchain. But this data hasn't been tampered with and hasn't been modified over this period of time. So that's a core characteristics of blockchain. And when you look at IoT or on-prem security or all aspects of external physical world, where how can you trust this is the truth? That technology doesn't really exist, right? You can write into a logbook, but you can use an eraser to get rid of that entry. You can tear out the page. You can produce a new logbook, right? Similarly, from a digital perspective, you can write to a log file, but you can erase the log file. You can change the timestamp on the file. There's all those things that you can do to tamper with data. And when you talk about security, but one of the beautiful thing about blockchain, that's what fascinates me, is every single block of data you create, there is almost a checksum, a verification to say this is the verification of this block, and it gets written into the next block. So that chain of blocks providing this truth, that's super cool. And I've never seen anything like it. And that's what I'm deeply in love with.
Do you think we've also reached a point in which the cost of deploying a private enterprise blockchain versus obviously rolling your own public, costs are a lot more security focus, audits, more development overall. Do you think we've reached a point at which people that are in the enterprise world looking for these solutions can now come to Lightlink rather than having to roll their own private or try and create their own public as a whole? So it's almost like we've reached the point of no return so that we don't have to use the traditional technologies and we don't have to roll our own.
Yeah, great question. I think it's for different purposes. When you look at enterprise, when we're in the more so in the enterprise world, the IBM Hyperledger, the R3 Quarters, you know, very well established large institution providing this capability, and we're competing in that world, right? Many of those projects are looking at a public implementation. And the reason is the same as I have explained at the start of the pod, and that is interoperability, right? So you can have an economy, an insular economy, when you look at country, for example, and you can have the best economy within a certain geography. But when you start doing business around the world with other economies, that's when you can substantially and grow at an exponential rate. It makes a lot of sense if you want to have a security system for military that wants to measure these files or these sensitive documents hasn't been tampered or changed, right? So maybe in a way you can use this technology. When you look at how can I tap into USDT or interact with this NFT capability or look at this DeFi protocol and work together, that's when a public chain and more interconnected economy is much better than the insular economy, right? So it's different purposes. And therefore, over the years, we've seen more and more enterprise projects looking at a public chain as a solution. And it's interesting to observe. And that's one of the reasons why we built our layer two to service the needs of our customers and customers that we talk to.
And I think there's also this point at which the scale of, let's say, your infrastructure now allows enough people to take advantage of it so that there are the trade-offs that they don't have to necessarily give up in terms of the security or the throughput. It seems 5,000 TPS is extremely high when you have Visa at, I think, 20 or 25. So that's extremely high throughput when it comes to it. And the costs, obviously, and quite substantially less than L1s and other L2. Super interesting. Where is Lightlink right now? And where is it headed in terms? It seems like there's been a ton built and a lot of proof positive, great projects. Where are you now and where are you headed?
Yeah, great question. So we're in mainnet. There are real people using the chain and projects integrating with it. We're in the state of growth. We've recently done the airdrop campaign on Galaxy. Come and check us out. To introducing people to Lightlink and encourage developers to be building on top. We're in a constant state of growth for the foreseeable future, to at least in the Web3 world, to encourage developers to come and think about what this new economic model could do for your protocol. As an example, Uniswap AMM is a very efficient, gas-efficient protocol. But if you want to improve user experience by doing other trading modes, gas would become cost prohibitive, and therefore it's not done. But in a layer two where computation power is in abundance, you can think about doing things a little bit differently because gas is not as of a concern as on layer one. In this environment where we have a different economic model, how can we unlock more innovation, better user experience? And that's the challenge we would love to have. We can't solve it alone, and we would encourage other developers to come and build on top. So that's one aspect of growing the Web3 ecosystem. And at the other side, we are actively looking at how can we onboard more enterprise customers, providing value, helping them to solve a problem, and onboard millions of users through that journey. And what I'm hoping to see in a year and a half from now is the merge, the integration of the two. Enterprise customers may be using a very simple payment solution initially to be able to call aspects of the DeFi ecosystem to introduce interesting things like maybe a little bit of micro lending, maybe better savings capability, right? Using transparent, composable, trusted DeFi ecosystems. And that's a dream, right? Because the current Web3 world is tiny in comparison to the real world. So the way we solve this problem is not by let's take attention away from other chain. Let's look at how can we onboard millions of more users using our enterprise partners and then add value using Web3 tech. And that's the true holy grail in my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me use my PFP for my Metro card, as well as earn savings back every time I load it and have some micro lending happening at the same time when I have extra money loaded on the card within a threshold that I've set with session keys, for instance.
Yeah.
And so then also on the developer side, what type of developers, what type of projects are you looking for? Proofs of concept, MVPs, hackathon type projects, or more senior projects that are established and mature, or everything in between?
Yeah, we're doing a bit of both. We welcome existing established Web3 participants, protocols, dApps to build on top of Lightlink to have a better user experience, right? Because if you're a NFT marketplace, you can do gasless trading. Right. And that would be pretty cool. If you do DeFi AMM swaps, you can trade wrapped BTC to USDC without the need of a native token. And that's really cool too, right? It can add value to existing dApps. From a developer perspective, yeah, we are trying to activate that capability to look at how can we encourage developers or the hackers out there to think about what this new economic model means for the innovation that you want to create. When you look at Ethereum to Bitcoin, you introduce programmatic capabilities, and maybe Lightlink to Ethereum is what does a different economic model look like? Because every other public blockchain uses the same supply and demand economic model. It's great, right? But it has limitations too. Why layer two doesn't have this limitation? Why impose this limitation? And that new economic model, hopefully through enough eyes, will provide more innovation and more usability for the masses.
Are there any projects that are currently using that economic model or using the protocol in a different way that you'd like to highlight, or just any awesome projects? You'd mentioned the game before, definitely bring that name back again, and any others you want to highlight? Play favorites, don't play favorites, whatever you'd like.
Yeah, certainly. Quite a few things, actually. The Red Village was really cool, being one of our first. They were a very great partner of ours when we started, and they were one of the first games that migrated and was able to have much better user experience as a result, because things happened frictionlessly, right? Now, recently, we've integrated another game called Grapes. So they're a huge studio collection of games, and a substantial amount of users play that game. But in that world, maybe value lives on BNB or on the chain, but important game records live on Lightlink. So it's an implementation of that concept I was talking about earlier. And we have another group that's building a whole DeFi ecosystem on Lightlink, leveraging the uniqueness of this new economic model. And one of the first projects is called Electric, and it's an AMM where it's all about gasless transactions. But at the same time, they can rebalance their liquidity pools at a much higher frequency rate, and therefore you have much better pricing for the users. And at the same time, you can actually introduce new trading models, right? Because it doesn't need to be AMM. It could be iceberg orders or limit orders or other types of orders that are better for traders, but cost prohibitive to do using standard economic models.
That's really cool. I love those examples. It's always fun just to break your brain. And also when other people build on top of your protocol and they're coming up with ideas and creating innovations. But what have been the successes for you in terms of introducing these ideas out into the public? Is it that somebody playing a game gets it, and that's the check of the box that you've done your job? Or has it been when developers come up with these novel use cases for it? Or is it just getting it out as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's still early days, right? When developers see the technology and go, hey, actually, I can do something with this tech. It's pretty cool. It's innovative because it helps my business in a way. That's very, there's a lot of satisfaction in that, because to help them to solve a problem, to add value, because it's not just another chain. We want to solve a pain that they have. And that's a cool validation. But at the same time, to see the stats grow, currently we do about 40,000 to 50,000 transactions a day. And hopefully by the end of this month, we can, through an integration of a couple of more partners, we can get to about 100,000 transactions a day. And that's fairly, in terms of number of transactions, that's fairly high up there. From a layer 2 perspective, where we will be around the number 10, 11th highest chain by transactional volume. And that's interesting to observe. And it just means people are using, users are utilizing the chain, maybe in the infrastructure manner, they don't even notice it. And that's what I view our protocol is, our industry to be, right? There are great innovation, there are great new models which we have introduced to better financial infrastructure, right? But from a chain perspective, it's still a computation infrastructure. And a lot of that infrastructure actually in other parts of the world is behind the scenes. How you send your email, how we do this podcast right now, how we do live streaming and other things, right? A lot of the technology fades into the background, and blockchain Web3 is one of those things where we actually surface a lot of that complexity. But to get real world mainstream adoption, it should be in the background. And to see millions of users to be able to utilize Lightlink without really caring about cryptography or seed phrases or worrying about gas price. So that's really cool, because that solves a problem in terms of how do we onboard substantially more users to the ecosystem.
It's as builders and early Web3 crypto blockchain folks, like we get so inside baseball with our jargon and our talk, but also at the same time, we're trying to shake up this financial system that is mostly built on jargon and technical talk to obscure and hide the ways in which they operate their businesses. And ultimately the end consumer doesn't care about those things and just wants their snack, their card transaction to go through or what have you. But it's very exciting, obviously, for us in the innovation space to get ourselves excited, get really nerdy, build cool things, and then start applying those edicts and important things that we've learned through the last 23 years of Web 2.0 with a simple primitive like Ajax or server-side technology, being able to talk to the client and update all of a sudden, you know, 23 years later, we have well-established Web 2.0 needs and billions of dollars, or trillions actually, when it comes to writing. Is there anything that you want to let us know that's being released soon, or anything coming up that we should know about that the audience should be informed?
Definitely. So we currently have a Galaxy campaign happening to, I guess, introduce Lightlink to the wider world. We've been announcing more and more real world partners. There are a few that are really, really exciting. Stay tuned on our social media profiles. And we are well on the way to realize that world I was talking about. Let's build Web3. Let's onboard Web3 ecosystem. Let's onboard enterprise customers. And you will see how that eventuates over the next couple of weeks.
Excellent. Definitely everyone go jump on that Galaxy campaign and get your participation up and help, you know, spread the word about Lightlink. So on that note, where can people find out about Lightlink, about yourself, also about if they're developers or builders out there that want to connect, what are the best ways for them to find you all?
Sure. Lightlink.io is our site. Developer documentation is front and center, the largest button on the homepage. And our Twitter profile is Lightlink Chain. Feel free to follow that. You can reach me on Roy Hui. I'm pretty accessible. You can add me on LinkedIn, DM me, anything. If you're building cool, innovative stuff in the space, let us know and let's see how we can collaborate.
Awesome. Yeah, always a good sign when a protocol has dev links documentation up front and center. Go build, people. Exactly. But with that, thank you so much. It was a great conversation and I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate your time.
Awesome. Have a wonderful weekend. I have an early one coming as Austin City Limits starts tomorrow. So can be attending that, and I hope you enjoy your weekend coming up as well.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
Thanks.